It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As solar power makes up a bigger piece of our electricity puzzle, there's a worry about a trade-off, especially in rural areas. If we build more solar farms, are we losing land for crops?
But at a research field near Stoughton, UW-Madison scientists are asking the question, why not both?
Agrivoltaics brings solar panels and food production into the same field, and it finds ways for the two to work together. For instance, some crops and livestock can benefit from the partial shade the panels provide.
Researchers are working to figure out the best ways to put agrivoltaics into action and carefully measuring things like water use, soil carbon levels, and eventually, of course, food output.
And they're looking closely at the prospects for the technology here in Wisconsin with our weather and soil conditions.
Producer Mackenzie Crummy and I visited the site earlier this month, and then researcher Ankur Desai came to the studio for more on the project. He's Vilas Distinguished Achievement Professor at UW-Madison and chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. I spoke with him last week.
Before we visit this research site, Ankur, I want to get into the why. Why we need places to put our solar power. You've talked elsewhere about our rising energy needs, our concern about climate change. Why is it important to do this kind of research into where and how we set up our solar arrays?
So the way to think about this is the world needs energy to do to all the things it wants to do, and that demand is only increasing with time, not just for some of the things we hear about right now, like data centers, but also all of the things that we do every day requires energy, and that energy needs to come from multiple sources. And right now, with a changing climate and with all of the demands on energy, solar energy is one of our best options globally and nationally and in Wisconsin, even if you might be surprised by that.
Now, there's this word, agrivoltaics. It was new to me when I first heard you talk about it. What is it?
Right. So agrivoltaics is this idea of, can we get dual uses out of land? Because in places like Wisconsin, we have lots of land. Most of that land is used for agriculture or forestry. And so if we're going to expand solar, which requires land, we have to make a decision. Do we replace productive agricultural land with solar, or do we find a way to do both at the same time?
And this is a big concern, right? If I live in a rural community, for example, do I want to see that cropland, all of a sudden the crops are gone and it's nothing but solar panels? This, and along with wind power, this is controversial in some communities around the state.
Absolutely, right? I mean, anytime we're siting for land use that's different than what we might be used to seeing there, whether that's housing, whether that's solar or wind energy, whether that's a fossil fuel power plant or a data center, right? We have to take the concerns of the folks who live there as well as the folks who depend on that land for things like their livelihoods, for the food production that we all rely on.
Now, the idea of having solar collectors and crops or pasture land on the same place, okay, conceptually, I get that. It's not as simple as plopping down some collectors. And this is really visiting your research station. This is really my big takeaway. A lot of thought needs to go into what we're doing here.
Yeah, that's right. Because you might, to an average listener, you might think solar panels, and you might hear the type you see, say, on the roof of a house or in a small field somewhere. But what we're talking about here are utility-grade solar arrays that need to provide power for the grid. So they need to be relatively large. And to allow farming to happen requires a lot of consideration about the spacing, what crops you can grow, and how much that changes things like the local water cycle or nutrient delivery.
My name is Josh Arnold. I'm the project manager for the Kuganza Solar Array, and welcome. We'll do a quick safety briefing.
Sure.
So we do ask all of our guests and workers to wear safety gear. We are super excited to welcome you to this project. This is a public-private partnership with the University of Wisconsin-Madison and Alliant Energy. So your safety briefing for today, the array is operational. As you can hear from the buzzing behind you, that is the sound of clean electricity going back into the grid. Partly because the array is operational, we are not going to touch any of the modules or anything metal, any of the racking, that type of thing. From this vantage point, you really get a perspective. This is our living laboratory designed with the Wisconsin idea top of mind. Three different types of racking systems, 5,424 solar modules altogether. And it's really designed to be to provide all kinds of options for our researchers to explore the intersection of solar and agriculture in the same location.
Can you give us a big picture of the Kaganza Research Campus in Dane County and how it's set up, the kind of things it's allowing us to study?
Right. So the Kaganza Solar Array is a unique setup in that it's a public-private partnership between the University of Wisconsin-Madison and Alliant Energy. And that allows us to be able to answer research questions while also providing utility-grade power that helps offset both the university's and the state's goals toward renewable energy and reduction of fossil fuel emissions. The idea here is that by having a research array that multiple researchers, not just my team, can come in, we can look at everything from pollinator habitat to water use to nutrient use to productivity of crops to local microclimate changes, to questions about whether grazing is possible or other types of activities.
Now, while we were out in the field walking around, one of the things you talked about is how these research sites can create small microclimates. First, give us a quick working definition.
Yes.
What's a microclimate?
Yes, it's a very little climate.
Right. I got that far.
Right. No, so the idea here is that, you know, and you might, you know, your listeners might have some personal evidence of this, right? You might live in a town where you know that some places are cooler and some places are hotter because it's shadier, or the parking lot of the local grocery store is much hotter. Those are what we call microclimates. So while the weather and the large-scale weather pattern sets up the temperatures and cloudiness and things that are on average, locally, because of the presence of different types of buildings or things on the ground and whether they reflect or absorb a lot of sunlight and whether they evaporate a lot of water or don't, are going to affect local temperature and humidity. When it comes to the solar array, one of the questions, solar panels, right, are relatively dark because they're trying to absorb a lot of sunlight, but that means they also emit quite a bit of heat. They shade the ground, which means the ground on net might be a little bit cooler, and that might also change some of the other microclimate variables we think about, like soil moisture and local humidity.
And that's a big part of what you're studying here, how that's, yeah, these solar panels are changing all of these things. And part of it is scale, too, right? Mm-hmm. If I just slapped up a couple little solar panels, probably not a big deal. If we're trying to do this at, like you said, a utility-grade scale, there may be unintended consequences that we don't know until we study it.
Yeah, and this is a question that was brought up to us from the state as well as other regulators specifically, in that one of the concerns about these expanding solar arrays is, are they likely to change climate around those solar arrays? And is it likely to change wind patterns for things like pollinators and pollen dispersal? Is it likely to change the air in terms of the availability of moisture in the air, which affects how quickly plants dry? What we're trying to do with this site is, the nice thing is that we have a multi-scale study where we can look at things directly under a panel, directly next to it with small-scale sensors like you saw out in the field. And then we have these towers that we put out there that are, 10 to 20 feet tall to 30 feet tall, that allow us to directly integrate the whole system as a whole and try to estimate directly how much net change in carbon uptake, how much net change in evaporation, how much net change in local heating is occurring. This little tower here. So this is our, what we're calling our control site, where we're outside of the array now, but into this farm next door. And if we want to understand what is the impact of the solar panels on our ecosystems, we also need to measure, well, what it would it look like if it wasn't a solar array? And so this tower right here is a shorter tower, about 3-ish meters, where we're kind of pointing it toward where the wind is blowing from and trying to kind of capture the productivity and water use of this field next door, which isn't the same vegetation, but the idea is, well, what would this land likely look like if it wasn't a research solar array? And Emily here is one of the students in my lab who does a lot of the data processing. I don't know if you want to talk a bit about what you do here and what flux towers do.
And I'm Emily Mather, a PhD student in atmospheric and oceanic sciences, working with Ankur Desai. So flux towers, they measure the exchange of energy and gases between the land surface and the atmosphere. And so when you change the type of cover on a land surface, it changes how that land interacts with the atmosphere. And so we're trying to measure, like, what is the difference between a farm and this solar array.
So this eddy covariance flux tower, similar to the one we saw at the control site, we're now in the middle of the fixed tilt portion of the array. And then the reason we're here is that we're kind of, as you saw, we walked a good bit away. We need to be in the middle or as close to the middle as we can so that whenever the wind is blowing, it is mostly sampling the air that is exchanging carbon dioxide and water and heat over the array relative to the open areas. And we can measure that. So again, this is something we actually bought off a reseller. This is a portable tower on a trailer. It can be extended up to 100 plus feet. We had it in a pine forest in central Wisconsin last, and then we moved it down here when that project wound it up. We bought it off a company that usually sells these for things like concerts when they want to put up more cell service, like when you have thousands of people in a field or somewhere. So it's really nice, and so we just went ahead and turned it into an instrumented tower.
We're talking about an agrivoltaics site in Dane County, a research area. Ankur Desai is a Vilas Distinguished Achievement Professor, UW-Madison, Chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. He works at the Kaganza Research Campus in Dane County. Let's talk some about the long-term goals here. I assume, like so much research that's happened here at the university, from discovering vitamins to how to measure butter fat and things like that, the goal is to eventually go out to people in the field, literally farmers and people with dairy herds and things like that. What are some of the practical outcomes you're hoping for from this research site?
That's a great question, Rob. And so this project, which we're working on here, was initially funded through the university through a program they call Research Forward, with the intent of being able to initiate novel and groundbreaking new studies that could potentially allow for us to discover and support things like solar energy in this case. Our hope really is to be able to provide the baseline data so that others can not say with confidence that, yes, putting a solar array of this size in this location will have these impacts to local yield, to local microclimates, from which we can make decisions about whether this is a good property to site such a thing or whether this is something that we should maybe use for other uses or conserve for other lands. And that's a question that, you know, only with multiple years of data as we continue to collect everything from the soil to the air to the plants in between, we'll be able to answer. And that's one of the goals as we continue this project forward. In addition to kind of doing some testing of like, well, what are the right types of information that individuals need? And so one of the things we're currently trying to build some support from foundations for is a little bit more of the education outreach, real-time data displays. Are these types of measurements useful when they get deployed, at, say, at scale?
Something else you pointed out to us was there's not just one kind of solar panel here. There are some that kind of tilt to follow the sun. Some are stationary, pointing south. Some are big and tall. Some are lower, you know, like shin level at their lowest point. Why these different kinds of solar collectors?
Yeah, so in some ways, the study of deploying solar panels on land, including on farms, goes back quite a ways, especially in some parts of Europe as well as in the southwestern United States. And through that study, there's been a lot of work on, well, if you're trying to farm land and you're trying to grow crops, how do you arrange the panels? Do you maximize sunlight, which would mean kind of tracking wherever the sun is with time, and that's called a tracking type system? Or that might be complicated for a machine. So maybe you put them in a fixed location that kind of most of the time gets you most of the light. So in this part of the country, that would be kind of facing them mostly toward the south at an angle. Or because you really need to get mechanized machinery in or animals to graze, maybe you put them really high up, right? And then the animals can walk underneath them. In fact, it might even provide shade and comfort for some livestock. Or you might even put them on fence rows, which is popular in Europe. And so then you don't get as much power out of them, but at least they're completely out of the way to farm. So in Kaganza Solar Array, we have three types of panels, both tall fixed tilt, ones that are more conventional, lower to the ground fixed tilts, and ones that are single axis tracking. And that allows us to evaluate the difference of these on both the productivity of the vegetation that's growing there, as well as evaluate other engineering questions that we might be able to look at.
Now, microclimates, let's go a little bit bigger. Wisconsin as a whole, there's a lot of solar research around the world. There may be other agrivoltaic research around the world. How much can we learn by looking at our specific Wisconsin soil and landscapes and rainfall and, you know, all those conditions that go into making agriculture?
Yeah, that's also a great question. You know, a lot of the agrivoltaics work in the U.S. initiated through a few research labs in the Southwest, where there was kind of direct benefits from shading plants because they get all the sun they need, and they're trying to limit the amount of water loss as much as possible. And so while that research is enormously valuable, it's not necessarily directly applicable to the types of landscapes we have here in the Midwest. And so there's been recent interest in doing more studies that are relevant to the places that might expand in solar. And in the Midwest, there's a lot of interest. There's maybe a couple small sites in Minnesota that a group works out at. But there really isn't anything like this in throughout the Midwest at the moment, especially in Wisconsin. And by working in a place that has some of the most productive land in the world and some of the highest yields in a variety of crops and sales and things like potatoes and other crops, like being able to evaluate this here, especially when there is a increasing demand for renewable energy, it's the cheapest form of energy around. And there are a variety of developers out there looking to expand solar, specifically in Wisconsin. It's timely to do this work here now.
And finally, this project has a lifespan, about a quarter century, and it's built with the end in mind a little bit. Talk about the long-term vision for what happens when this site stops being an agrivoltaic site.
Yeah, it's a good question, right? One of the nice benefits is this is land that's owned by the university. We're next to the physical sciences lab, and that allows us to kind of envision what we might be able to do into the future. Yeah, this isn't meant to be a permanent installation, but really an opportunity to do research studies for some period of time, hopefully scale those out as we learn from those and potentially do larger studies. Potentially be able to secure additional funding, right, to be able to do new types of work in different locations. And so the long-term plan, I'm not 100% sure what will happen next. It's hard to predict how things happen in 25 years, but it allows us to have some sort of end goal in mind, right? Like the goal here isn't to do research for research's sake, but it's to do research to learn things that we can use to support society.
Ultimately, for people who aren't familiar with this, and I've seen you do presentations on this, what are you hoping the public takes away and understands about this Kongonza site?
I think the thing that I want the public to take away is that any energy source we use, whether that's coal, that's nuclear, that's fusion, that's solar, that's wind, right, requires land and space and resources and people, and it has impacts. And if we don't study those impacts and understand the relative benefits of these, then we're not going to be able to make good decisions about where should Wisconsin be going in terms of its energy use. We know energy demand is going to increase in this state just from data centers alone, but also from many of the other uses we envision. If we're not smart about this, we're not going to necessarily make the best choices.
Acker, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much. It was fun.
That's Ankur Desai, Vitalist Distinguished Achievement Professor at UW-Madison and Chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Thanks to Mackenzie Crummy for production on this segment and Tyler Ditter for sound design. We've been talking about agrivoltaics here in Wisconsin at the Kongonza Solar Array near Stoughton.